Welcome to The Rink, a hockey podcast by hockey bloggers for hockey fans. I'm James Tapeleg Graylian, along with Tom Luongo. This week, Michelle Therrien is out. Matthew Schneider gets moved to the Montreal Canadiens. And hey, would you believe it? Money actually does matter in the NHL. I'm in LA, and you are tuned into The Rink. Last night at the Anaheim Ducks game at the second intermission, I checked my cell phone and immediately ran into the concourse because I really wanted to ruin a Penguins fan's day, which is unusual for me. I don't like ruining people's day, but after seeing that Michelle Therrien got finally fired from the Pittsburgh Penguins, I wanted to find a Penguins fan and tell him, and I couldn't find one. It was really strange. You just can't go. You can't go 10 steps without finding a Penguins fan these days. But it was finally the inevitable happened. Therrien finally got fired by the Pittsburgh Penguins. I guess a very bad loss. It was finally what did him in. I don't know. This is something that I think everybody has been kind of seen coming in the media, in the fans, and I'm really interested in what this kind of means for all parties involved.
Well, I can tell you that it hasn't done anything to help to wake the Pittsburgh Penguins up out of their slump, seeing as they lost in a shootout this afternoon to the Islanders of all people, and it was Crosby, actually, who had the winning goal the tying goal on a stick and couldn't bury it. I think this is, at the end of the day, a classic example of you can fire the coach, but you can't fire the team.
Right.
And so, you know, Ray Sciarro had to do what he thought he could do to wake a team up. We'll see what happens over the course of the next week. I mean, we had a firing last week where Craig Hartsberg got fired out of from Ottawa. Corey Kluston took over and immediately changed the way they play a little bit. They're much more aggressive. And honestly, Ottawa now has taken down, I think, four teams in a row. They're on a four-game winning streak, and it seems to be working for them. They're playing a lot more like the Ottawa Senators played a couple of years ago when they were, you know, beating everybody nightly. The forecheck was good. They had a lot of energy, and it just, you know, it's that coaching team seems to have worked. Now, how that translate to the Penguins, that were, you know, today's game notwithstanding, what is still going to be a
We heard a lot about that from when Barry Melrose was fired, and when a coaching change happens, usually the team gets a little bit of a spring in their step. Of course, we saw what happened to the Tampa Bay Lightning, which was they were still losing after the coaching change. It took them a long time to really turn it around, if we can call this really turning it around.
From where they were, I guess it would be. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, from and if of course it may be a strange case, because as everybody said, Barry Melrose wasn't very well prepared, and it seems like they had to kind of rebuild from scratch. And the Penguins shouldn't have to. I mean, and what are we on now? Is this are we now on Sidney Crosby's third coach since he's been in Pittsburgh? Is that correct? Or was Therrien brought in? Therrien was brought in after Sidney Crosby started. Correct.
Yeah, he was. And I think it was Eddie Olczyk before that. Yeah. Possibly. I can't really. So the Penguins go through coaches like, you know, a lot of people go through socks.
True.
So,
some of my socks have holes in them still, but so does and we're still dealing with the same. We're on the second GM for Sidney Crosby at this point. Mm-hmm. So I'm starting to wonder what this really means for Sidney Crosby, first of all, and second of all, the rest of the team.
And it just gets back to the same thing where you cannot. You know, you look at the moves that Sciarro made in the offseason, and you had outgoing players, and they were replaced with inferior versions of those players. Mm-hmm. And that was enough to take the team from winning to losing.
Right.
It's just really what it comes down to. That the difference between winning and losing in the NHL is very, very slight. Mm-hmm. And that's that. It could be as much as, you know, a couple of minor injuries.
Yeah.
Could be, you know, any number of things. I mean, Boston looked impenetrable all season long. They lose Michael Ryder. They lose they had a couple of injuries now. Not long-term injuries, 2-3 weeks here or there, but makes a difference.
And it does.
Makes a huge difference.
The other person that I wonder who this means something for, of course, is Tom Rennie, who's everybody expects him to be the next guy fired. They expect him to be the guy fired, you know, who it was kind of the race to the finish line for Tarian and Rennie. And even on NBC this weekend, of course, was the big question. You know, the big question got brought up at the intermissions. He's the next whipping boy. So now that Tarian is gone and kind of the seal is cracked on that big team, are we in the same place here?
We may be. I mean, it's you know, there's a lot of money and a lot of prestige thrown at the New York Rangers. I mean, this is a team that everybody picked, everybody expected to not only make the playoffs and make the playoffs going away. They're not playing well. The guys that were paid a lot of money to come in and turn the Rangers around are not performing, and you know, they even to the point of saying we're not performing, i.e. Chris Drury was, you know, quoted after the game the other night as saying, yeah, I'm not doing the job I was paid, brought in here and paid to do. Well, that's nice.
Well, that's nice that you made.
I mean, you know, that's nice to sack up like that, Chris, but you
that
know,
$2 will get you a cup of coffee, you know, exactly. It's not going to get you goals,
and it's going to get Tom Rennie fired.
Yeah,
and that's really the real issue, because at the end of the day, Tom Rennie is a hell of a coach, and you know what he's achieved with previous year's Rangers squads was nothing short of amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, those were not particularly good teams, especially the ones that, you know, especially the one that put the big scare into Buffalo a couple of years ago. That was, you know, on paper that was not a good hockey team, but you know, he made it work and he got the most out of the players that he had, and I'm not sure what's wrong with the squad. I think it's as much a bad mix of players, or is it, you know, is it Glenn Sather's fault? Is it Tom Rennie's fault? Is it the player's fault? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you know, that's, you know, it's really what it comes down to.
I mean, well, and also you got to look at how many real threats there are right now to the Rangers. I mean, the Florida Panthers haven't been a threat for years, and suddenly they're shooting up the standings. They're 7-3 in their last 10. You look at the Carolina Hurricanes, even though they're 6-4 in their last 10, which is, you know, it's still above 500 hockey, and that'll get you there. The coaching change at the Penguins, you know, and that's a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you look at it, it's like we talked about it last week, James, that you know, fourth to eighth in the East, the shuffling is going to happen a lot. There's going to be a lot of shuffling happening in the East from the existing playoff teams, and then only Pittsburgh and Carolina are really on the outside looking in. And you know, but either of those teams are more than capable of going on a run and really putting, you know, really putting some pressure on not only the Rangers but Montreal, who's playing very poorly. And there's actually some squawking about Guy Carboneau's job.
That's kind of that would really surprise me to see Guy Carboneau lose his job. But I think that if there is any real threat to Carboneau, I think that he's gotten a slight stay of execution today with the trade of Matthew Schneider back to the Canadians for pretty much, I believe it was just picks.
Yeah,
which, you know, that's the biggest trade we've seen so far this season.
Yeah, it was. I just read Pierre LeBrun's write up on it. It's a second round pick this year, and a third round pick next year. And depending on how far Montreal goes in the playoffs, will depend on what round pick Atlanta sends back to Montreal. So it's either going to be anywhere from a second to a fifth round pick. The deeper they go, the lower the pick, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Schneider is a great puck moving defenseman. He's that power play quarterback that they need since they lost Mark Streit to the abysmal Islanders. We'll see how it works out. I mean, Schneider hasn't had a great season, but he's playing for the, you know, arguably the worst team in the NHL. So yeah, you know, you can't judge that book by its cover.
Yeah, the only thing that separates them from the Islanders right now is a few syllables and a few points. Exactly. And, you know, he's been minus 10 this season, but, you know, if you're the Thrashers especially, tell me you don't pull the trigger on that deal. I mean, that's just good deal for you in a basically an unsalvageable season. And eventually if those picks pay off as infrequently as they do for the Thrashers, but if they actually do pay off, you've unloaded yourself a bit, you know, a decent amount of salary right now and gotten some, something good in return, essentially.
Well, if you know, the salary point's important. This morning, on Myrtle's site. James Myrtle has a link to the Falconer's post about the ownership situation in Atlanta and how that's going to come to an head soon. Anybody who's interested in it, you go to James Myrtle's from therink.com. There's an article about a link about the Thrashers ownership and how that the two factions are fighting in court over basically control of the team, and that effectively there's no money being dumped into the team because of the amount of red that is showing up on the Thrashers balance sheet. And that is really, I think, what was the driver here in for moving Schneider's salary. Pierre LeBrun brought up the really good point that they're going to save something like $1.7 million over the course of the final third of his contract. And had he waited till the trade deadline, one, there was the opportunity for Schneider to get hurt. And then two, he saved himself $500,000 by trading him now is before the deadline, because that's how much Schneider's going to make in the intervening time. So, yeah, I mean, for the Thrashers, $500,000 is a lot of money.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of sad when that much – I mean, that we see that in the minor leagues, for instance, where I remember it was the Fresno Falcons were saying that they were losing $10,000 a game. And when we think about the NHL game, well, whoop-de-doo, you know,
right.
That's nothing. But,
right.
Yeah, at this level, $500,000 being that big of a deal to an NHL team that has that's ownership group also owns the Atlanta Hawks. That's that really says something about the franchise.
Exactly. I mean, you know, you talk about the Fresno Falcons losing $10,000 a game. Matthew
and
Schneider
was
makes
a shutdown situation.
Right. Yeah. Matthew Schneider makes $31,000 a day, whether he plays or not. So, yeah. Yes. There's a slight difference in scale that we're dealing with here. So,
before we get to the money deal, before we talk about the economics of the NHL, which there's plenty more to go as we love to bash on that a bit. That Matthew Schneider deal last night happened at the Ducks game that I was at last night. With the very excellent Earl Sleek. Great story about it, Mr. Sleek. He when we were at shot number 16 for the Ducks, he said that shot number 17 was going to be glorious, and it was. The Ducks scored, and then he called and they said shot number 19 was going to be great, and shot number 19 went in. So. If anybody needs needs any bets on the Kentucky Derby, that's your man. that Ducks game last night was horrible, absolutely horrible. Losing 8-4 in a very ugly fashion to the Thrashers. J.S. Shiger gets pulled after letting in 5 goals on 25 shots, and then Hiller steps in and lets in a goal on his very first shot. And the Ducks are losing to the bottom teams right now. They lost to the Islanders. They're not looking good at all right now.
No, they're sitting eighth in the West. But look at where they are. They're at 61 points, and now they've given up more goals than they've scored. The issue is with them is that they've played 2 more games than everybody else. Still, Anaheim they've slid in positioning, and now. They're still, you know, farther along in their schedule than everybody else around them. So there's plenty of opportunities for teams to pick up points against them without even doing anything. So now the question is, you know, after a game like that, do the Pronger and Marchand trade talks really begin to intensify?
Yeah. Well, after last night's game, I could see it, and I don't think that the fans would be. Would feel that bad about it. Now, same thing with J.S. Shiger. I mean, I know that there's a little bit of murmurs about him, but you know, he's always been a little bit of a he's been a bit streaky season to season. It's
right.
You know, last season was a great. You know, he had his Stanley Cup run in 2003, and then the next year fell off the boat, and then you know came back for a season or two, and then now he's you know the wheels are falling off again. And I think he's just a very emotional guy, and which is okay. I'm not saying that's
sure.
a bad thing, but that it does affect you know the things in his life have affected his play. You know,
well,
I know he had family problems with
his father. Died.
Yeah, his
father
passing
died.
Away. He had after losing the Stanley Cup, but winning the Conn Smythe. I think that really hurt his play for a while, and that's you know that's understandable. That's not saying
sure.
that you know the guy shouldn't be emotional or shouldn't feel these way, this way, but it does affect his play. And I can tell you, last night at the game, the Ducks fans were not happy at all.
And they shouldn't be. I mean, they figured that this group had one more year to have a kick at the can, and there's what, 15 UFAs on that team this year?
Yeah.
14 or 15, some ludicrous number of them.
And the only defenseman that signed long term at all, or even to next year, is Chris Pronger, and that's crazy.
Right, and he's only signed for one more year.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I mean, Brian Burke left the team arguably in a very good place, in a very good state, and left the new GM an opportunity to, put his imprimatur on the team this summer. So it's a very odd thing to watch a team with that much veteran talent, with that much experience, go through this kind of, I don't want to call it meltdown yet, because all they really have to do is, kick it up a notch and play 7-3 hockey for the, 70% hockey for 20 games, and they'll be solidly in the playoff mix.
Oh, yeah,
think.
Absolutely. They can pull away easily that way.
Yeah, they can easily pull away from everybody else around them who's, just as. At the end of the day, I think it's really interesting if you look at the standings in the West and how tight it all is and how anything can really happen. But, again, I would give Anaheim still the benefit of the doubt to pull things together and get it done.
Yeah.
But then again, you never know.
It's a strange game. It is. I don't want to spend too much time on this. I just wanted to quickly mention that for the Colorado Avalanche, Paul Stastny is on the current road trip, which of course probably means that he is healed up enough to return to the team from his broken arm. I also want to mention that I got that news from the Colorado Avalanche Talk blog run by Shane. I will put a link to it. It's at avstalk.blogspot.com. Got to give credit to the sources when you have them. And I first saw it on an independent blog.
Nice.
The Avs also beat Detroit in the shootout, 6-5 the other night. Not that the Red Wings really need the 2 points, other than they would have tied the Sharks. But at the same, they're absolutely in the playoffs. That's almost a guarantee at this point. But it seems like Chris Osgood thinks he's playing with the St. Louis Blues again. He is turning up the suck knob.
Yeah, he hasn't played well at all this year, I can't believe that Detroit's going to go into the playoffs with Ty Conklin.
What other choice do they have at this point, other than unless Osgood can really turn it back on again?
The only thing I can think of is to look at NHL numbers real quick while we talk about it and see what cap space they've got.
I don't think they have very much at all with the.
I don't believe they do either.
Oh, in fact, I can tell you they don't have it because of the suspension that happened for Lidstrom and Datsyuk at the All-Star game. They actually couldn't dress a full complement of players for the game because of salary cap.
You're absolutely right. They're pretty much over the cap except for long-term IR. So they're going to go with what they're going to go with the two guys that have brung them this far.
Yeah, so. And there's always been questions in the minors. I believe it's Jimmy Howard down in the minors that they've always had questions about as to whether or not he's ready, and he never quite seems to be. So it's an interesting situation. They've got arguably the best defense and the best defensive system in the NHL, and aside from maybe, let's say, Minnesota playing the trap and boring hockey, but that's not the excuse at this point.
No, it's not. But this team's gonna. If they're gonna win anything this year, they're gonna win it by scoring goals, because that's what they do. That's what this incarnation of the Detroit Red Wings does really well. Without a doubt, they're the only team at this point over 200 goals scored. So, and it's 215. I just looked it up. I'm like, oh my god, that's a lot. That's a lot. That's a lot of goals.
That is a lot.
I'm just wondering. Goal scoring is nice, but goal scoring does not win Stanley Cups. Just like. Penalty hit Kellen doesn't win Stanley Cups, but it doesn't get you to the playoffs, but it wins you Stanley Cups. So we'll see what happens.
The Avalanche won in their shootout. The Penguins lost in their shootout today. And didn't the Sabres win in a shootout over San Jose the other day?
Yeah, actually, it was a very interesting game. It was the night of the plane crash. That plane actually went down in the neighborhood where most of the Sabres live. As a matter of fact, I think Pat Laleem was called by his brother-in-law, who was like watching the plane fall. And then the big and Lilim said he got out onto his front porch to, you know, to look in that direction and see the big ball of fire. The NHL considered not playing the game that night, or gave the Sabres and the Sharks the option of not playing the game. They decided to play it. And Pierre LeBrun and the local Buffalo media on Saturday morning had a lot of really great coverage about how important it was not only to play the game, but then for that team to win that game that way. It's a very, very close-knit community in Buffalo. I don't know it personally. I keep hearing about it, you know. And they blew a 3-0 lead against a team that's, you know, arguably the best team in hockey, who, by the way, has the flu, and that's part of the reason why they're, you know, turning up the suck knob right now. They jumped out to a 3-0 lead on three power play goals where they had stunk up the joint on one for 13 on the power play against Ottawa 2 days before. And they gave up, you know, they gave up 2-3 goal leads in that game and had to come back and tie it with 4 seconds left. And Pominville deflected a shot from Craig Brevet from the point, 4 seconds left. It's like, you know, Sabres circa 2005 winning every game in the last 4 seconds. And then, you know, they went five rounds deep in the shootout. And yeah, it was a hell of a win. And you could just see it in the building, how important it was for, you know, the people in the fans. You know, every once in a while, you know, the hometown team does something to help bring the community together a little bit. And we wish we could have that more often. It actually happens in sports every once in a while. And so, you know, sometimes it feels good to be a fan of a particular organization.
Yeah, no, that's a great story. Of course, like you said, the Sharks have been battling flu lately. It's and they've lost three in a row. And of course, on the Eastern Conference, the Bruins have lost four in a row now.
Mm-hmm.
The mighty are falling.
Well, regressing to the mean a little bit. Some injuries, the flu, things like that. Even the best teams, you know, will succumb to those external pressures. By the way, there was a interesting point about that game in San Jose, which is that neither team really, you know, if you talk to both coaches, both Todd McLellan and Lindy Ruff, were both like, at the end of the day, it's just a hockey game. You know, what we do is really not all that important in the face of this. So they both told their teams to go out and play the game as best you can. I don't even care if you win.
Yeah,
honestly, it's really the way they kind of put it out there. Which I don't know. It's just the stories like that happen in the NHL more often than I think they happen in, I don't know, in other sports. At least we keep hearing about it, and it makes me happy to be a hockey fan.
No, it does. Me too. It's a what do we always hear about on in other sports? We always hear about shootings. We hear about we hear a lot of other stuff other than just other than the feel good stories. The feel good stories always come from one player, and they rarely ever come from a team.
Right.
Things like the Chicago Blackhawks and their broken bus tour story, mm-hmm. Going to the funeral. There's all kinds of great hockey stories like that, and and then on the other side of the coin, you get your what do people always seem to be interested in? Sean Avery.
Sean Avery.
Sometimes
and,
it's not fair.
Yeah, Sean Avery and the latest ugly violent incident on the ice that ESPN can overpromote.
Well, that's what the non-hockey fans seem to always gravitate towards, and that's, okay, fine, I can understand.
It's their prerogative. Exactly. It's not their game.
It's easier to understand, to watch an incident rather than understand a game. But
exactly.
Oh well. Back to the money front. There seems like a lot right now. There's of course the rumor. I hate using that. I hate using that term just because I think right. Rumor, and I think of certain bloggers, and I think of certain made up stories and things like that. There's the story, of course, that the Ducks are for sale.
I didn't hear that.
I doubt that. Talk about doubt on that one. Why would you sell the Ducks just a few years after you bought it? They're not. It's not like they're being. over-promoted right now, so I'm sure that there's room for work right now. Last night's attendance was over 17,000, and if you had over 17,000 at a Devils game or a Thrashers game, they would probably throw themselves a party at this point. So I'm not buying the Ducks being for sale at all.
I'm not either, but I don't have any information or any. No, I'm sorry,
Okay.
I don't have anything intelligent to add to this
conversation. I was throwing that one out there. The other one, of course, the big one to me at least is the discrepancy in Tampa Bay of announced attendance versus versus paid tickets.
Yeah,
it seemed to actually come to light, which is something we never seem to get in the NHL.
Right. I think the reports now it's over 2,000 tickets per game is our freebies given away, which is a lot.
That is a lot.
I think most teams average somewhere around 1,000 or something like that, maybe 1,200. Same thing was happening in Buffalo pre bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. It was crazy. The Regas family was giving away, you know, thousands, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 tickets a game. Insane numbers just to get people into the building. That's how bad things were pre Golisano. So yeah, it's usually a harbinger it's a harbinger for extremely bad revenue stream coming in. So don't expect anything in Tampa to improve. So if that's the case, the idea of them trading Martin Saint-Louis, that also has a lot of credence at this point.
Yeah, I'm not, again, another one that I'm just, you know, how often are they going to sell the franchise here at this point? They've Vinny LeCavalier cannot hold the entire team up on his shoulders. You know?
No, he can't. He really can't. Yeah. But what's interesting is that, you know, this is something I've been hitting on. I hit on for a while when I was working for Fanhouse, but I don't think I'm working for Fanhouse anymore. And I've just been one of those things that I've been, you know, fascinated by for a long time, which is this, you know, idea of going forward. Is the salary cap going to drop? And while everyone's mostly convinced that it's not going to drop for next year because most of the revenue for this year was booked before everything got really ugly, coming in 2010, 2011, there's a real issue. And, you know, Tom Benjamin's got a post up, of course, given that's Tom Benjamin, he's got to have it up there as Bettman's nightmare, that all of a sudden now the salary cap is somehow – he's going to torture this argument into it being Bettman's problem when it's really Paul Kelly's problem because, as one of his commenters, the great Gerald Carpenter, always talks about, he's like, at the end of the day, Paul Kelly's got the constituencies much more divided and their economic interests are all over the place. And Bettman's just going to – it's not really Bettman's problem. At the end of the day, if revenues are shrinking, they're locked into, you know, this sliding scale of percentage of revenues. It's a partnership at the end of the day. The real problem is going to be whether the players, as I've said all season long, whether the players are going to re-up this CBA in the option, that last option year, given a falling salary cap. And regardless,
I don't see why you wouldn't at this point. I mean, this salary cap at this point is turning into the player's safety net more so than the owners, which was not how they originally envisioned it.
That's true.
The only people I've been thinking about this for a little while, and I was jotting this down like a month ago or something, was the only people that I could actually see wanting to reopen the CBA at this point would be the Phoenix Coyotes, Ilya Kovalchuk, and that's it. Aside from that, just stay where you are. If talk about a safety net.
And yeah,
if the owners may want to, but I can't really see the NHLPA saying, well, sure, why don't we accept this opportunity to make even less money at this point?
Well, I mean,
maybe that's just short-sighted of me, but at the same time, I just keep thinking to myself, if I were in this situation, yes, I'm having to pay out of my own pocket essentially with the escrow payments.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm guaranteed this much, and in this economic climate, why would they be willing to give me more of anything?
Right. Because, well, one, they're not, and two, that's the first thing that that came up in discussion about this is whether or not guaranteed contracts were going to go the way of the Dodo. And if that's the case, then yes, the players are going to be happy with the deal that they've got it currently and want to extend it into the future as much as possible.
Absolutely.
Even if their you know, their nominal salary is shrinking, you know, sorry, things are tough all over. What are you going to do? You're just, at the end of the day, you're just playing hockey. So yeah, okay, I can see it that way. So I don't see even so in a sense, maybe if it's going to be Bettman's nightmare only if and only if he can't keep the owners who are generating most of his revenue on the bandwagon. Mm-hmm. So now the real question then is, under that scenario, you know, just how long are the Torontos, Philadelphias, the Rangers, and the like going to prop up the Phoenixes and the Floridas and the Tampas and whoever mm-hmm. else is, you know, getting economic assistance and or, you know, all forms of revenue sharing, otherwise known as welfare. Now, thankfully, the revenue sharing system is not complete welfare, but still, it's still one of those. It's still, you know, it's still an issue.
Well, if you can cheat yourself into if you can cheat yourself into revenue sharing by giving away tickets, by buying your own tickets, then essentially it is welfare.
It's the one pot of welfare where you have to show revenue growth that's greater than league average. That mm-hmm. a lot of these troubled markets, I won't call them failing markets because even though I think they are troubled markets, are not going to. That's the one they're not going to get, and that's a significant portion of the revenue sharing. That's the one where, you know, if the league's revenues are growing at 4%, you have to be growing at greater than 4% to qualify.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, period. If you don't, and for example, Nashville didn't fall into that category. I don't think Phoenix did either, and they only got two of the three pots last year. Right. So that's part of their bottom line. That's part of their revenue stream problem if you count, you know, their revenue sharing checks as part of the revenue. That's the one I was really talking about. At least mm-hmm. it's not completely bogus. But, you know, there's other issues in terms of, yes, you have to have X number of season ticket holders and all of those other things. So
yeah.
I don't see how Atlanta survives this. I don't see how Phoenix survives. I don't see how the NHL, honestly, survives as a 30-team league in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it.
Well, maybe it's just me. I'm just trying to figure out why the CBA has – and correct me if I'm wrong here, the CBA has revenue sharing written into it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Why would they negotiate with the players their own revenue sharing within their own system? Why would the players be involved in that? And that's something that I'm not exactly sure why they would have done. I think that may have been a little bit short-sighted because there's no reason that the owners couldn't do that on their own separate of the players. The players have their salary. Why would the players be involved in revenue sharing?
That's a good question, and it's a very good question, and I can't really answer it. And
yeah, I just don't understand because
I've never really considered it from that perspective before. That's a really good.
Now, mind you, we're talking about the NHLPA, which is quote unquote a players' union, but the NHLPA is not a union as far as most unions are concerned.
It's fundamentally not. Actually, it's fundamentally not a union.
Well, it's fundamentally not a union. It's just all they do is collectively bargain. But they still vote. They still have all the. They have all of the things that a union has. They have their executive board and all of these things.
What they don't have is the legislative portion under the federal labor code that they don't have a status as a union. Particular type of organization.
Here's a quote unquote union, a players association that allows each other to punch each other in the face. They haven't had a seriously solid leadership until I would say now with Paul Kelly. I mean, even Bob Goodenow was good for a little while, but considering how it ended, I always say anybody who needs a history lesson should go read up on Allan Eagleson and see how the NHLPA used to be run. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those things to me that the NHLPA needs to step it up as kind of their own business entity and actually start to care about these things. They never have before. I mean, I understand these guys are hockey players. They want to play hockey. That's what they want to do. That's what they're right. Not business majors most of the time.
Yeah, but they're out at that point where the amount of money that they're capable of generating for themselves is significant enough that they should consider a lot of these things. I don't know. At the end of the day, what's going to really be important is how well the team and the player treat each other going forward, like any other good labor management situation.
Right.
That, you know, we talk about hometown discount. We talk about all these things. At the end of the day, the hometown discount is whether or not the player feels that he's been treated well while being quote unquote an indentured servant, for lack of a better term. Okay.
Right.
That, you know, how well they've treated him and they've brought him along in order to facilitate him to become the best player that he can. And I think that, you know, we can hold this. There's certain organizations that do it right, and there are certain organizations that don't do it right. And obviously, Detroit is one of those that does it right. I think, I always want to bring up my own team, but at the same time, I think also you're also looking at teams like San Jose are beginning to get it. I think LA is finally starting to get it after all this time.
I think the Avalanche used to get it, and I'm not sure if they do.
They do anymore.
Much anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I think at a certain level, I think the Dallas Stars get it. I think Tom Hicks down in Dallas does get it. And you can get players, you can keep roster stability through, you know, getting them to play for the crest on the chest and not the name on the back. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that, you're going to have a much easier time keeping your team together. Even in the face of expanding salaries and, you know, and all of that, or shrinking revenues or whatever. That's just the way I feel about it. I think that's where you're going to really have to go that route. And then hopefully if the owners and the team management do that, a lot of these CBA issues really become obviated and they become moot. That, you know, because the players will be happy to play for the teams that they're playing for. And I think the move towards younger unrestricted free agent age, I think the move towards more competition during restricted free agency, I think is all forcing teams to react towards treating their players better as they get younger. Mm-hmm. It takes out that the naturally conservative, it does – what's the word I'm looking for? Select against the naturally conservative guys who want to hold on to their players until they're in the prime of their careers and right. Don't want to pay them for it and only want to pay them after the prime of their careers. And that's the part that I always found was the most frustrating part about watching the CBA discussions during the lockout. I couldn't understand it. I'm like, that was it. I mean, as an economist, my argument is, you know, they should be able to freely contract for their labor at a certain level. And the longer you try and hold on to them and underpay them, the more they're going to resent you when that time is up. So push it earlier and, you know, you might actually at the end of the day wind up paying them less mm-hmm. during the prime of their career or, you know, over the course of their career than you would have thought.
I think that anything, if anything, this is going to really test whether or not this truly is a partnership between the NHLPA and the NHL. And my feeling is they're going to find out pretty quickly that it's not.
Most probably. But I think some teams will do better than others in that situation. We'll see.
Well, Tom, I have to get to a hockey game. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Armenian Heritage Night tonight at for the LA Kings.
Excellent.
Excellent. We will talk again shortly. There's a lot going on.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Anytime, James. Enjoy the game.
Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink. Tom Luongo's writing can occasionally be found at nhl.fanhouse.com, and my blog is at jerseysandhockeylove.com, where you can follow along with my West Coast hockey tour. I even have pictures up of the very first Zamboni. Go check it out. The Rink, as always, is at www.rinkpodcast.com, and you can email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter if you want for updates. It's twitter.com/rinkpodcast. And, of course, you can call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. So many options. Thanks for listening to The Rink.